Hello and welcome to the Watson Weekend. We're your hosts. I'm Rick Watson.
Rick, Dr. Watson's in the house. Hi, I'm Jessica Lucheski. Happy Friday.
The B team is gone. Long live the A team.
A team, all systems, Thundercats, go. We're
go.
Here.
Go. Combine Voltron, something.
All the things.
All the things.
All the things. Yes. Should I tell them what we are, Rick? The weekly hit of retail tech, e-commerce, all the things. We know that retail's in a reinvention loop, and we're going to decode the chaos. It's one Prime Day tantrum and tariff threat at a time.
I know. There's a daily tariff threat, so we have to be here to decode it.
We do. We do. I miss the decoder rings. Those were fun. But now
two weeks ago, it was gold. Last week, no gold.
No gold. No gold. No. Only silver, actually.
Yes. Exactly.
So who brings us this fine piece of content every week, Rick?
Yeah, every week, this company called Miracle, who helps with retail reinvention, because traditional e-commerce is just code for not growing, join over 450 retailers doing better than the status quo with retail media, dropship, and marketplace all in one place at enterprise grade scale. So reach out to the fine folks at Miracle and help sponsor this sorry excuse for a podcast.
No, we're making changes, making waves, decoding tariffs. And we always have a great show for you. You know, we are going to keep this new little game we've got going with the headline hangover, the guess the headline. So we're going to head over to the headline hangover and bring it to you, because it feels like it's faxing in 2025, right?
Exactly.
Yes, and we're so grateful to Crystal for sponsoring this. It's CRSTL. You can see the future at CRSTL.ai.
Love it. Oh, right. They already have the scoreboard up.
Scoreboard is up. So I think this is you.
Okay, where do we start? Walmart adds blank ocean shipping lane for sellers. Jess.
Ooh. That's blank ocean shipping lane for sellers. I'm going to go international.
No. Vietnam to U.S. I mean, international, it's a little
too generic.
I mean,
okay.
This is where Walmart plays the game with Amazon. Anything you can do, I can do better. Yes. I mean, Amazon's had global logistics for a long time. Walmart has added it in the last couple of years. And so this is a little bit of a sign of the times as brands, manufacturers, and their resellers diversify from their sources and bob and weave around the tariffs. So that's the game here. And so I think Walmart adding the Vietnam lane is a way for their expand their program. And this is the first port outside of China for the Walmart service.
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, look, you've in this day and era that we're in, you got to bring some new strategies to bear, and Walmart's not going to go lying down, right? They're in this space. They're here to compete and win. The marketplace has been contributing significant growth to their overall story. So they got to keep that gravy train running.
They're in it to win it.
But now it's a boat.
Right.
Now it's the gravy boat.
A slow boat.
Yeah. All right. So I've got one for you. Amazon brings what to 1,000 cities and towns?
Same day delivery.
Grocery is the word that we're looking for. So I'm going to give you a half a point.
All right.
Because you gave it to me last week and I'm feeling generous this week. So, you know, I did like kind of crush you last week. So I guess I'll give you a halfer on this.
To be clear, last week the B team was in. I think you're thinking some other time in the past you may have won accidentally.
Yeah. I'm gonna go with a no. So Amazon, we have talked about this. It's like the thing they cannot quit, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like the story that just keeps going. And if you want to run through a really fun timeline, Rick, I got it for you on this whole grocery story. Okay. Did you know that like their grocery odyssey, this maiden voyage that they've been on, that they just can't quit, started in 2007, Amazon Fresh V1.
2007.
It was their grocery delivery pilot in Seattle.
Okay.
Then they, in 2013, they expanded it. 2013 now, expanded it to LA and San Francisco, had plans for more cities. 2016, went in the UK. It had a physical store. Didn't work out. 2017, the Whole Foods acquisition. 2018, the Amazon Go stores. Amazon now Go Gone.
Yeah,
so,
Go She
then
Gone.
They had, yeah, then they had the Fresh physical stores.
There's some in the airport, no?
Oh,
those are the stores that you can't get in.
Yes, maybe.
You just walk out, but no one can just walk in.
You just walk out, you can't walk in. So here we are now today, 2025, and what they're doing is basically ensuring that customers can like utilize one cart, get all their groceries along with, you know, your AirPods and the other random crap that you might have in your Amazon cart at any given time. Yeah. So it's going to be 1,000 cities.
AirTags is my random thing.
AirTags is your random
cart. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Shepherd's starting football. So we've got lots of like football gear like in the mix right now. So then they expanded, they plan to expand to over 2,300 municipalities by the year end. And look, it's not a bad little business for them. They did $100 billion in 2024. So it's like nothing to sniff at. But they just really cannot crack this grocery nut. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. Look, Amazon's answer to everything is ship it faster. really. Add more stuff, ship it faster. So this is, you know, not surprising that this is Amazon's playbook for grocery. They are smart to be they've consolidated. Used to have three different carts on Amazon, Fresh, Whole Foods, and regular Amazon. Now all that's one cart. And so if you're going to get things from different places in one place, supply chain is very expensive. It makes sense to unify their supply chain, make it faster. Yep. I think this will help them. It's not going to help their stores, which is where most of grocery is.
Right.
But they're making it cheaper for Prime members. And so I think incrementally it will be improvement. I don't think this is the step change yet.
Yeah.
So
this isn't going to crack the code for them.
It's going to be another 15 years.
Yeah. Hey, but the can't stop, won't stop.
Yeah, exactly. Also good to see the peanut gallery in here. Meeting Mr. Kaplan from a remote location, undisclosed.
Yeah, I think he's like trying to vie for being an impartial judge or something versus us judging ourselves.
Yeah, we want to see what his vote would be.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, the next one. This was for you. This is close to your heart a little bit. Mm-hmm. Can Stitch Fix make blank inside the company's return to growth?
Also, make a profit?
No.
Come back.
A profit is... So look, don't call it a comeback. They are showing some signs of not being dead. So let's start.
Okay.
Posted the first revenue growth in 12 straight quarters, which is very bad, right? Mm-hmm. You had 12 straight quarters of no revenue growth. You had one with growth. They're predicting another one. It's so interesting. The article in CNBC is where I read this. There's an aside, like, while the apparel retailer's customer file is still shrinking, comma, they've increased AOV. Like,
There's that's usually a recipe for success. Your customer file is shrinking, new to file shrinking, but I've got AOV expansion because either I've raised my prices or I've gotten savvy at how to get the person to buy one more thing.
Yeah, I don't think this is a way forward for them. If the customer file is still shrinking, I'm not sure they're going to make a comeback, because you can only AOV your way for so long.
For so long, yes. I love Linda's comment here. Sounds like they're hanging by a thread. Touche. Ah,
boom.
Good one. Yeah, you know, look, I think Stitch Fix had a great model at one time where people were busy, they were tired of shopping, they wanted a stylist to do the work for them. But I feel like there's now so much choice, and there's a lot of curation that's now happening by influencers, right? Mm. Where it's like, here's my look, here's my style, right. Like to Know It is really strong there. And so it's not as difficult to find things that can look good together. Capsule wardrobes are trending on Pinterest. Like, there's other ways, I think, that now people are figuring that out. Plus, like ChatGPT, let's not forget about, you've got AI in the mix now, where people are, I think, starting to like take pictures of their closets and like put them into AI and say, like, what would you do? So like, there's, I feel like there's other savvier ways that you don't necessarily need to rely on someone like Stitch Fix as much as you did in the past. So I agree with you. I wouldn't call a quarter a comeback. They have been here for years. We'll see if they'll be here in the future.
Exactly. Yeah, it's unclear what's going to happen next.
All right. I'm going to bring us home and see if I can stump you.
Oof.
Google makes a what play?
Awesome. Google makes AI play. Is that like the default guess?
It is the default guess. And you know what? I would give it. It's your, but you're so wrong. They're making a payments play.
Okay.
Blame
I'm
it
so
all
wrong.
On their roots, you know?
Yeah.
So Google in this story, did you see the news here? You know, Chrome
Autofill.
I did
not. What happened?
Look, Chrome Autofill is going to be your financial wingman.
What?
They are going to hang out in, you know, be there in the background, ready for you to like evaluate all these like different credit card options that you have when you're shopping online. Make sure you like, here's a recommendation, you get the most points. But really the big story here is the buy now, pay later integration that's going to happen with Autofill.
So they've
got Affirm, Klarna, Afterpay, more coming soon in quotes. And really, you know, they want to jump on this train of the growth that's happening in buy now, pay later. It's going to be up to 7% of transactions this year. 1 in 5 customers are saying they are using a service like this. They don't want to be left behind. So what do you make of that?
I'm not seeing anything here that's gonna, it's gonna be helpful. People
you don't
already
want
have
sitting in the back as you're
people,
shopping online.
Yeah, like, people already have a wallet. I mean, isn't Shop Pay and PayPal a thing? Is Google trying to now Google Pay? They already have Google Pay, and so I guess it's just becoming more default.
I think that's what their hope is. And, you know, now they're like, if they think that under these economic times where things might be a little bit tight, they don't want to lose those transaction opportunities. They're like, hey guys, you got some credit card debt. No worries. Just throw that on a BNPL.
Yeah.
Check out. You're good to go.
Yeah.
So
until they can pay for my burrito in installments, I refuse to call them a super app. So.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, look, they're in the game here. And I guess I can't really talk about Google without mentioning the whole Perplexity Chrome web browser thing. And maybe we're supposed to leave that
decision.
For next week, but that's a whole other story.
Yes. It's, you know, we'll just leave that there for today.
Okay. All right. So I guess you won. I'm not really, I mean, if you get the half a point.
I think it was pretty overwhelming. I mean, there's not really a question, is there?
Okay, well, I'm coming back for you next week, Watson.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for the headline hangover. We appreciate Crystal, CRSTL.AI, the new way to EDI, for helping sponsor it. Thanks again. This week, we have one of our biggest thinkers on the show, and Kaplan. Interviewing him. So Emmett Shine, he was a founder and creative director at Little Planes, co-founder of Pattern Brands. Those onsen towels are like so chic and awesome. And at GenLane, he helped launch and grow brands like Harry's, Sweetgreen's, Neuralink, which I do not want anywhere near me, Him and Hers, Warby Parker, Smile Direct Club, all these players that brought over 75 brands to market.
Also,
I think you will really enjoy something a little bit offbeat this week. Put on your thinking caps. This is hard. This will be a hard listen if you're just walking the dog. You probably need to sit down and concentrate.
This is your meditative.
Yes.
One, right? This is the show to meditate to in your retail zen.
Yes. I love it.
Yes. So, and thank you, Nick Kaplan, for covering for the slackers who couldn't do the interview.
Exactly. The B team has become the A team. Thanks, Nick.
Hey, hey. I am Nick Kaplan. I'm here with Emmett Schein, who is a friend and an interview I am incredibly excited for. I don't know if you know this, but when I recommended you to these guys, I did not know I would be the one speaking to you. I'm sitting in for Rick today. So, hello.
Yeah, what's going on, Nick? And hello, everyone listening. Thanks, Rick and Jess. I just was in the lobby listening to Rick and Jess' weekend song. I don't know if anyone's heard that, but it's a pretty good bop. Like that a lot there.
Yeah, right. Weekend. Jackie's part of the team. Her band Rail RYAL is awesome. I also find that song very catchy and stuck in my head. But let me jump in because I know we will go long and deep. And, you know, before we go that direction, I've had the pleasure of knowing you for a while. We do a lot of things together work-wise. And let me just tell the world who you are. You are Emmett Schein. I think you are, as I would say, kind of a designer and entrepreneur, a founder. I think you sort of... it's like Little Plains is your current thing, but you kind of grew up out east of New York. You sort of made your way from there into the city as a designer. You founded an incredible agency, which you'll talk about during this call, called GenLane. You then kind of went from GenLane to Pattern, and then Pattern to Little Plains. And Little Plains currently, I would say, like kind of a branding and experience design studio, right? Like, you're this guy that has this awesome convergence of like art, design, and like business. And so that is you. I am Nick Kaplan. I sometimes sit in for Rick. I'm a guy that builds communities and figures out how to commercialize them and surrounds himself with incredible people like Emmett Schein. So here we go. You ready? I mean, I'm going to make this like,
yeah, I got the weekend song stuck in my head, so I'm about to put my roller skates on and head to the mall after this.
Nice. There we go. So, like, let's go big right away. So, it's like, to give a sense, right? It's 2030. Where are we going? Like, talk about the past and the present and the future. Like, kind of give us your high level 411 on like commerce and brand, and riff on that for a second.
Yeah, I was talking yesterday, I think with Vinny. I guess a few things. One, like we had some funny conversations where it's like, are your refrigerators gonna know this and your eggs or whatever? And I guess I'm kind of less interested in that, and I don't know whether my refrigerator is going to know my diet preferences and automatically order eggs for me. But I think at a high level, I try to think conceptually, to your point, past, present, future, where our experience is kind of going as it relates to technology and cultural adaption. So 5 years is kind of an interesting one because you have the adage that people always overestimate what'll happen in 1 or 2 years and underestimate what'll happen in 10. And I'm not really sure where 5 fits in that. I, I think it's probably a little bit of both. I think with artificial intelligence, I think it's less applicable for this conversation, but like quantum computing too, like they are exponentially moving fast, but they are still adhering to somewhat the constraints of gravity in terms of chips and processing and raw materials and costs and energy. So I don't know, you know, some people think that stuff will just kind of linearly progress. We've made as many kind of huge breakthroughs and it's kind of predictable linearly for the next few years. Other people think you can have, you know, artificial general intelligence, maybe artificial super intelligence. What does that mean? Kind of really hard to understand or predict, because once you get past quote unquote general intelligence, you don't know. It's in theory kind of more conceptually smarter than what we know how to in aggregate do as a collective, which is human intelligence. Like I'm as an individual pretty dumb, but I get to sit on top of many generations and lots of people's information. You go back 10,000, 20,000 years, whatever, individuals probably were a lot more multisensory intelligent than a person today. You know, an average white collar, you know, information worker is pretty specialized within the society that it works and operates in. But they don't know how to go into a field and, you know, understand what berries are in season or poisonous, or how to field dress something that they kind of kill, or how to navigate tribal kind of politics that are, you know, going on. So to try to pull it back, I guess where I think for in 5 years, one, I think a lot about interfaces, so websites and applications, or, you know, voice, or augmented reality or virtual reality. I think virtual reality will kind of kick that off first. I think it's a hard one because it biologically, again, if you go back 10, 20,000 years, you know, Nick's ancestors, my ancestors, you listening, you know, you could Bill and TEDx an adventure, take a time machine, and biologically we're still kind of the same. Conceptually, intellectually, brain-wise, we're still the same. So I think virtual reality is a hard pill to swallow because you're closing off a lot of your senses, important ones, which are eyesight, and they still haven't figured out a lot of the heaviness and nausea and motion. So virtual reality, I don't know, maybe if it makes some big breakthroughs in the next few years, but I don't use virtual reality, I use headsets. I don't really consider it part of these conversations. Augmented reality is this weird, interesting wild card where, like, I actually think it is pretty, like, that's one where I think people underestimate in 5 years. Like, my wife has the Meta Ray-Bans, and she genuinely wears it and likes it. No one says anything or thinks anything. They have this, like, bone weird way it plays sound or something, so it, like, emits it out of the sides of the glasses, and you can hear it just as if you're wearing headphones, but you're not cutting off. Like, I have noise cancellation on because we're doing a podcast. Even just the audio of the glasses is pretty cool, but that is adding to your reality. And then optically, like photographs and videos, etc., asking questions. Like, she's gotten really into birds, so she'll, like, take a photograph of a bird she sees and then ask an application for identifying it. I'll pause there so you can say something.
That's so cool. And I was like trying to, so many interesting things. I mean, and you can never tell who's wearing those glasses, by the way, but I do think the adoption rates are getting higher. All right. So, like, let's go back for a second. So you've actually launched some massive brands, and like, you get the consumer, and I think you have this really interesting, like, as I said, this divergence of, like, design in business. So, like, you talked about behaviors changing. You talked about sort of, like, augmented versus virtual reality, the evolution of humans, or lack thereof, or, like, the good and the bad. I mean, like, how do brands and businesses, like, speaking of evolution, like, how do they evolve to, like, to meet it?
Well, so two things. I guess I'll try to answer your question to also more directly of 2030 for e-commerce, and then I'll try to I guess, break down ratios. Like, I always just say numerator, denominator. In math, you know, the numerator sits on top where the line is, and that can kind of be swapped in or out like a sushi carousel or Mad Libs. But the denominator is gotta love sushi carousels. Yeah, they're like the assembly line of food. And then the denominator is constant. So I guess in 2030, if I had to predict stuff, one, it's like agentic and ambient shopping, you know? So like, last night I took my wife, on a date, you know, she's like, okay, like we've been busy, like take me out. I'm like, all right. And then of course I classically idiot guy, like overworked and forgot about it to the last second. So then I'm texting friends and, you know, I also went on ChatGPT and it had the new beta agentic, you know, feature. So I'm like, let me test it out. I was like, I live in, you know, this zone, downtown kind of Manhattan. I want to go uptown, French, Italian, classic, you know, Lady and the Tramp stuff. Give me some recommendations. She likes Via Carrata, if that helps. It goes and runs this whole thing for 10 minutes while I'm just texting friends. So I'm kind of like, let me just test out like the human side and then the agentic side. And through a friend of a friend, you know, I got a really great reservation at an awesome place uptown. At the same time, the agentic thing finished and I'm watching it chug, do this, checking Resi, checking OT, checking Eater, you know, New York, The Cut, reviews, social media. And it comes back after 9 minutes and it recommends like the wine tapas spot next to where we live, like literally like underneath where our apartment is, you know? So agentically stuff still has a long way to go. But I do think that is one where we may be underestimating in 5 years what it means to, you know, ambient is more kind of like vibe coding. It's almost like vibe shopping, and how deep that kind of gets, I think, is kind of interesting, where you can be walking around your house and we all know Siri and Alexa, they kind of suck in terms of the fidelity of what it can do. But I was using Slack yesterday and then I had to walk home and I was like, fuck, I can't wait till like I can like AI style, like just talk to my Slack and just be like, you know, Slack, read me everything that's going on per this chat. Can you answer this? Can you describe this Loom video that I don't have time to watch? Can you look at this Figma file? Like, that is the ambient conversational intelligence that I really am excited for interfaces to have really soon. It's not going to happen in a few months in the totality of like Her the film, where that is ambient navigation of reality. But I think it's going to incrementally happen, and that's going to be kind of exciting. For me, who does more brand-based marketing, I think story-driven discovery is kind of interesting to think about. If you have to pare down, or if you can rethink the Shopify kind of template, or like the Squarespace template for how many sites are created, or whatever, WordPress, this, that, and the third, there are thematic templates that everyone uses. If we're more navigating stuff in a different discoverable way versus hunt, gather, we have to click and do that. Is there more opportunity, whether it's on social platforms or on websites or applications, to create more narrative-driven experiences? Because that is going to be the competing differentiator versus product grid and pricing, because we're not going to maybe make those decisions. Something agentically is just going to search for it. I think brands as ecosystems, to your point, like creating communities and helping people build businesses around that. I think like AI assistance, part of that ecosystem. Other stuff that I'm not as smart about, but I think is really interesting, is like supply chain. So I think further decentralization and last mile, last minute stuff, kind of like what Amazon does, but businesses having the ability to do that more onshore and having more, you know, micro fulfillment places, I think will be really interesting in maybe the next 5 years. And then I think commerce can be everywhere. I don't know if it's going to be like Blade Runner style, which is always dystopic, where he's just like walking through a mall and every ad is just being shown and personalized to him.
Right.
But I do think some forms of that are already algorithmically happening on our phones. So I think it only makes sense that that would kind of continue forward.
But like, let's go back for 1 second again. So you're a you're a builder of brands. Like, I think that that's a very good way to describe you, right? So it's so interesting to hear a creative and like, I consider you a visionary. Like, you are on a, I've always said this, you're on another level, and it's so impressive. And what you're able to do from this like business and creative side, but like you're talking a lot about your replacement on some level, right? I mean, you're talking about brand building in the age of AI, and like in an age where AI can generate concepts and design and really even a brand voice, like what, I guess two questions, like what becomes of you and like, and sort of what you're solving for as a driver of this with a lot of the things that you're working on and the applications you're using. And then secondarily, like what becomes the moat of a brand?
Yeah, I guess I'll like real talk it at like 9 something in the morning for me and 6 something in the morning for you. and I guess, you know, if people do listen to this on LinkedIn or something, like, one, I kind of hate.
They will, dude. We're popular guys.
You're calling.
I hate podcast style when people act all smart, like they have it all figured out.
I do not have it figured out.
I get so frustrated, and so much LinkedIn stuff and culture is like confidence bait. You know, it's like, oh, there's that person's super confident, so I'll like follow whatever the hell they're selling. Like, I'm always trying to invert sell. Like, I don't like hard selling, and I don't trust hard sellers. I trust soft sellers. So it's like pull marketing versus push marketing. So I'm gonna try to pull marketing, soft sell this. One, like Nick, you're super nice and gave me a nice intro, and like I can pay my bills and I can exist. I'm in New York, Long Island. I'm super happy. I got a wife, took her to dinner last night. I have no fucking clue sometimes what I'm going to do in a month or in 3 months, because I say so much, and this is where hopefully this is like meat of the LinkedIn person listening conversation, working in technology in whatever capacity that is, I'm not building NVIDIA, you know, TCIM, Taiwan or whatever chips. So I'm not like, oh, I'm in technology. Like I drive to Silicon Valley and I put on a white lab coat, or I'm an open AI, you know, researcher being competed for by Meta or whatever. I still work in technology. We all work in technology. It's a double-sided sword, and you can hold it and it can have an incredible ability to cut things down and drive you forward. Final Fantasy, this powerful object that you know how to wield. On the other side of the blade, it can cut you back just as fast as you can cut it, use it to cut something else. And what I metaphorically mean is like, I have an agency, Little Planes. Like, I think I'm kind of smart of stuff. Like, I do a lot of research. I speak to a lot of people. I tinker with tools. I also have a pretty deep background in art, culture, you know, writing, design, brand marketing, you know, growth performance marketing, e-com, technology. I understand the space I sit in. I don't know how to do a lot of other things because I'm kind of the information knowledge worker specialized. I'm put in the woods. I don't know how to do anything. I have to go order coffee for myself. I don't often know how to do it. I'm pretty non-generalist good at navigating reality. I'm not one of those polymath people that's like Captain America good at everything. I am terrible. I'm Captain Underpants. But for this specific thing, I know how to do it. Knowing how to do it, the past month or two has been crazy. We get, for Little Planes, we get a lot of VCs send their startups to us and they say, Emmett, you're really great at branding, positioning, communicating complex ideas, new ideas, making it simple, making it easy to understand, making it look cool. And somehow when things launch or relaunch, they do well and people perceive them. And then they go to the websites, the applications, or the consumer journey user touch points, and they're easy to use and they make sense. Here's this new startup. It's this for that. It's AI B2B SaaS. It's AI consumer. It's D2C with some new product using some new technology. I'm like, okay, cool. And I look at it, do a little bit of research, speak to the founders, go try to understand audience that it's trying to connect with, and just do my thing. The past 45 days, I've had so many inquiries where they want a vibe-coded brand and website, and they want it for a fraction of what I think the US-based fair market value of prices, in a fraction of the time that I would say fair market craftsmen and craftswomen would say this would take. And I already operate, I'm not working with Nabisco. I'm not working with WPP. I'm not working with Heinz. I am only working with arguably some of the best and brightest, hardest working, fastest moving founders, operators, technologists, business builders. And so we'll do 6-week cycles, you know, and it's define, design, deploy, run another cycle. That's pretty fast. That's built off like we work 37 signals. Like,
but wait a second. Are you not working with those larger companies because is that a conscious choice? Meaning like you don't fit with them, or like, it's interesting to say, as most people would sort of covet those bigger contracts. So I'm curious as to why that is.
There's two parts to it for me. Again, seeing that I kind of disdain LinkedIn Confidence Corps, I also disdain people telling other people what to do as if there's a broad stroke application. I know what's applicable for me. That's my nature nurture. So that's my disclaimer. I have two parts of it. One is I do have somewhat of broad theoretical, like a thought. But the first is, to me, I don't work great with big businesses because that's my nature. I don't know, ADHD, combustible, impatient. I'm very autodidactic. I don't do well in lots of structured kind of processes and this is the rules. And that is totally fine. And I have a lot of friends and people I love that excel and thrive within more structured environments. The second part that I will say, I think, is kind of a broad stroke applicable, and this is me maybe being a little bit provocative. I do like being as close to the metal as possible of holding the blade, and I'd rather have my hand bleed because I'm holding the blade really freaking close than be away from it. And my fear has kind of been over the past, you know, many years, the more bigger businesses you work with, the further you get away from the quote unquote metal, right? Like the metal meaning like actually where, you know, the computers, the transistors, like the silicon chips, like, and you're coding almost on top of it. You know, you're like etching in the metal. Like, yeah. I want to press my face as close to the metal as possible. And that's really scary because it moves really fast and it can change on a dime. Just like my whole business over the past 45 days, the asks coming in are crazy, right? So on the bigger business
give us an example.
On the bigger business side, they're not going to see or feel that. I'm getting the tremors, they're going to get the earthquakes, right?
But so like, give us an example of like the craziness that's coming. Like, tell us like over the last 45 days, because I know a lot of these private equity companies.
Is like, yeah. I'm seeing it on the front lines. And so if I'm just a manager within a large business, even if it's a technology smart one, like I want to be able to scramble and move fast right now because stuff is crazy and stuff is changing really fast. And I get claustrophobic if I can't navigate. Like, I got a little pirate ship, so the seas change, I can kind of change with it. So to be specific, like little planes will offer up, let's say 6 weeks. A startup comes to us at A16Z, Y Combinator, Thrive Capital, whatever, you know, and they'll say, we want, you know, a brand and a website. It could be a launch website, right? And so we'll say, okay, we sit at the premium of this particular market. A cycle is anywhere from 10 to 15K a week. And then we'll generally try to do 75% in cash, 25% equity per what the value is. So cycle one could be 60 to 75,000, cycle two, 60, 75,000. So two cycles, building a whole brand, building a website, you know, building a go-to-market strategy. Let's say we have two cycles to do that, you know, 120 to 200,000 in total value, knock down some of the cash, split, change some of that with equity. One, getting equity is not everyone can do that or ask for that. That's part of our model. That's part of our ask. I think we have a track record. We can ask for that. What the asks have been the past 30 days as like, okay, I'm willing to give you 50 to 60,000 and I want all the same deliverables done in 4 weeks, at maximum 6 weeks. And so the process I run, which is sprint-based, week over week, asynchronous, synchronous, multidisciplinary pod. So we've got, you know, interactive designer, brand strategist, copywriter, project manager, technologist, front-end developer, whatever. They're all fractionally put together. they probably work on 2 to 3 projects at the same time. And we kind of give them to these startups that don't want to go out and hire 6 different, you know, contractors or ingest in 3 to 4 full-time employees when they're moving so fast, they don't know what the right FTE is to get. So we're kind of a general contractor where we have world-class stable of talent that people can fractionally purchase to go build these tip of the spear initiatives, an application, a website, branding, go to market, whatever it is. And we sit on the more premium side, but you know, there's pricing, which is way more expensive. And then there's more commoditized, cheaper. There is this barbell kind of effect. I was talking to a friend, Willem Van Lacker, who's at Thrive and has Terrain Capital. He's talking about how you can stay on the premium side of creative services, but then you're going to get sucked into the world of larger corporations that can support these bigger budgets. But that's as far away from the innovation as possible. That's my kind of diss is generally like, there is innovation. You're a publicly traded business. You have legitimate access to capital. You can set up infrastructure and teams and budgets. Like, I definitely work with very constrained budgets and I like that, but sometimes scale and reach, globalization, you know, the problems you have to solve. It's just a different strokes for different folks. The other side of the barbell is how fast and how cheap can you do it, which is always kind of a classic race to the bottom of commoditization. And so you kind of have the technology just cannibalizing everything that you can think of. I don't know, spin the bottle. Like, I'm just talking about websites and branding and strategy, you know, performance marketing, analytics, you know, any white collar thing. Like, lawyer stuff is kind of funny because you still have to go through humans, but I it's hard because like so much lawyer stuff you can almost kind of do. And so we have had to go and retrain ourselves and a lot of our team to generatively produce a lot more in a node-based process using tools like Flora, where we're prompting, getting stuff to create, going through flows to produce higher fidelity strategy, positioning, some of the content, and then vibe-based kind of coding, looking at tools, you know, there's Lovable, there's V0 by Versal. It's, can we take this, spin this up off a prompt, then go into Next.js and customize this to get it to the taste quality level that people expect from us? And can we cut that cost down 120 to 200,000 to 60,000, which is, you know, over 50%, but we're cutting the time and materials down from, let's say, 100 hours to 20 hours.
Got
so it. I'm having a whole R&D part of our team right now trying to figure out how fast and how efficient can we go while still capping it on the prompting level and the output level with quality control and taste. That is the human differentiator. So circuitously, to answer your question, on one hand, I think I'm one step away from obsolescence every day that I wake up because I'm selling services that are being commoditized every day. On the other hand, I have taste, I have experience, and people trust me and I know what the fuck I'm doing. So that is my anti-fragile Nassim Taleb unobsolescence is my understanding of cannibalization and having taste as a cherry on top.
Got it. I mean, so much there again. I mean, number one, for all people starting businesses, or I mean, really that anyone that wants to be the best has to have that mentality of like, I'm one step away from obsolescence. I've got to train harder, learn harder. Two, I think, you know, you said something about, I think it's undervalued how much investment agencies or people like, you know, me and Rick, right, in learning, in researching, so that the clients, the brands don't have to, because that's like a skill that in a service they're paying for. But I digress. So you talk in trust. We're going to talk about trust in a second. So like, you talk about like micro brands, right? And like, it's interesting that you're seeing people coming to you. It's like a, you know, spin, like spin it up, like the rise of a micro brand, right? And I guess my question is like, will we ever? It's like McKinsey just came out and like, it was interesting. Like, they talked about the consumer and like how the consumer is behaving. And I think they use the word like irrationally, like what they'll buy, what they won't buy, where they'll splurge, where they'll save. So like, in thinking about how that consumer is behaving and thinking about all that's kind of happening in the world and the TikTokification of business, I mean, do you think that will ever build a brand like Nike? Do we think we'll ever build a brand like that again? Or is this like currency of trust, which we talk about all the time. You can trade in price, you can trade in trust. Is this currency of trust, these micro brands that are being driven through, we'll call it again, the TikTokification of business. Like, is that the future?
Well, I guess to get back to my numerator denominator thing, like numerator wise, I think like things are always changing, but there are things which are kind of constant. People are constant. Social kind of behaviors and fabric are generally at a root level constant. They do numerator change generationally. I think you can look at, you know, what your life was like as a child growing up to what your children's life is like. And there are some stark differences of what you guys did or didn't do and what they do or don't do. I think on the Nike question, it's like, it is one that people like to hypothesize a lot on. Like, is it the death of, you know, brands or brand building or trust, or can you still build a 50 to 100 year business? And I'm just pretty much in the school of thought, like, yeah, like for sure. Like, I just think people will continue to build, you know, big, trusted brands and businesses for a long time. I think numerator wise, how you navigate the playing field is kind of Ready Player One changing or Tron style changing. I think it might be a little harder in the ways that we're traditionally looking at how brands and businesses are built. But I don't think when Nike was built, it was a super easy playbook layup. It wasn't a business school kind of case study, you know, thing. You read Shoe Dog and it's a pretty circuitous, you know, happenstance kind of butterfly effect process to innovate and create essentially an entire new space and category in America and to some extent the world. So again, that's why I think things are, maybe history doesn't repeat itself, but it kind of rhymes. And so I think right now, you know, like there are brands and stuff that are being built, you know, Road or Rare Beauty or something like that. You know, maybe those are two celebrity backed beauty brands that just pop into my mind for some reason. I don't know if they'll be around in 50 years or 100 years. But I think they're legitimate businesses, you know, and I think there's a lot of other ones that are in consumer that people, I don't know. I think you can build trust kind of fast in a weird way. Like it's sure. Slow because, well, it's kind of like overnight successes are always 10 years in the making. So you could build trust fast, but it's based on a foundation of probably spending a lifetime doing something. So I don't know. I mean, I'm still in the market on both sides, I guess. Like, I definitely work with some brands and products that I think are kind of quick hits, you know? Yeah. This is kind of interesting. Let's test out this AI for this SaaS tool, or let's test out this brand or supplement. On the other side, there's certain businesses or brands where I work with where I'm like, oh, wow, these guys are going to try to really build something generational, and they're mapping out, you know, 25 to 50 years. Like, that's really hard. Like, my little agency, Jin Lane, I had for 12 years, and I didn't really appreciate that that's kind of like cool or rare because I was just younger. And then we went and built Pattern. I'm like, all right, I'm going to do 25 years. And then we raised, you know, venture capital, and that kind of became harder to, you know, just navigate that. I'm more now doing little planes. Like, I own it. It's independent. And It's like, I'm from the Hamptons on the east end of Long Island. My dad, I just sold his really small landscaping business that he ran for, you know, 20 something years. And you can make a totally good, normal living in the Hamptons doing blue collar services. You know, it's a great place to be a craftsman, a tradesman, and be a carpenter or be a landscaper. I have a lot of friends, families or parents, whatever. And they are general contractors, carpenters, plumbers, you know, electrical engineers, you know, they have a pool cleaning business. Everyone is a landscaper, trees, shrubbery, pesticides, you know, and some of them, you know, it is generational. They'll inherit, you know, their grandfather's plumbing business. They're great businesses. And I think that's part of where, like, I don't think they care too much. You know, the guy who does general contracting for my house that I went to high school with, you know, he's always like, yo, can you help me with like social media stuff? And I'm like, you don't need it. You know, what I'll just do is just tell everyone I know what you're kind of doing, word of mouth, which is really valuable referral base. I don't think you need to go and speak in front of the camera. Like, there's a lot of real estate agents that I grew up with. Now they're real estate agents because I went to high school with
them.
And they speak in front of the camera because that makes more sense for that profession. So my point is,
you don't think everyone needs to speak in front of the camera?
No. And I think that it's like, I was in Japan, you know, whatever, like a few months ago. And that's the land of the 100-year businesses. There's multi-generational businesses everywhere, different culture, different setting. But I am obsessed with, can you build brands and businesses that can last, you know, more than 5 years, 10 years? You get over 10 years, we're working on all these AI companies, and I'm doing
a brand
relaunch for a printing company. They're fourth generation, 100 years old, and it has nothing to do with tech or anything. I was so excited to just do it because there are a bunch of New Yorkers that are just printing. They just make packaging.
But you keep referencing generational, and like, I guess I get that, and that is great, right? And if I had, you know, if I had like someone to give me something and carry that on, and I had grown up with it, I mean, that's one thing, right? It's a can versus will, right? So can we or will we? And so I guess the question is, like, we can, but I feel as though the TikTokification and the social component and the exposure to young people has sort of, it's almost like, you know, I made this comment, we went to dinner, we had a date night last night too with another couple. We were talking about, like, my kids, like, they're at A, they want to be the best, and they want to get to Z, but they don't understand, like, what it takes to get from A to Z. I feel like sometimes it's like, we're at A, want to be Z. And I feel like social media and, like, the glamour and the you know, money and the culture has changed that. And I think we're now like, I'm going to build something on social media, I'm going to turn it. And yeah, the dynamic of private equity changes everything. It's amazing and terrible at the same time, right? It's like, you need capital to grow. You need that instant, like, gratification of, like, I gotta be big. To your point, like, 10 years in the making is the overnight success. It takes a lot of grind. And do you feel like you deal with all these companies? I mean, you reeled off like triple A, right? Private equity firms, venture capitalists that you work with. Like, again, to go back to that question, it's like, we can build another Nike. I mean, it's like Nike. It was like lightning in a bottle, but will we ever build that? That's the question, right? It's like, do people who don't have, like, you are literally starting from zero today. Will they stay the course, the grind? And I feel like, I don't know, I feel like that in this world of AI, in this world of sort of like instant gratification, I don't know that that happens again.
Really? A lot of my friends lament how fast technology and society is changing. And they are like borderline nostalgic Luddite for like prior times and eras. And I say to them, like, do you think that if you were alive in the 1930s or the 1860s, it would be so much simpler? Like, if you were alive during skyscraper boom in cities, and, you know, if you were alive during the industrial revolution and steam and spinning jennies and, you know, stuff all over the world, like, why would that be conceptually easier if you're alive? You know, it would be crazy. You know, where are we going next? You're in the 1960s. I mean, you go back to certain decades and stuff when you were younger. I don't know if you and your friends were sitting around at 15 going, you know, I can't wait to work really hard to get from A to Z. You're probably sitting around on a bench looking at hot rods and American Graffiti style, you know, thinking about what's Easy Street, where's a pretty girl, where's a, you know, who's got something fun to kind of do. I just think that's the biological maturation of humans. I just think the terrain changes, but the people don't. Like, I would say, like, don't hate the player, hate the game. The game is the game, and just the way to play it kind of evolves and changes. And so what is all TikTok-y kind of today could have been, you know, radio killed or video killed the radio star, you know, 1980s MTV and I Want My MTV Dire Straits style and cue the electric guitar. I don't know, like, I'm sure Cyndi Lauper style running through malls and girls just want to have fun, and the Brat Pack of the 80s was people lamenting the same thing that maybe radio talk shows, you know, and now we're doing digital teleconference, coast to coast podcasts, and we're lamenting kind of the new terrain that the young folks are kind of ingesting and navigating. And if both, if they only understood what we understood. And you fast forward in 20 years, God knows what, you know, like the next generation will kind of think, so on and so forth. But that is a constant, that is a denominator. Right. And that's kind of how generations and cycles kind of work for us, which are maturing, aging folks that still, you know, need to work and draw a paycheck and enjoy working. It is, again, part of the double-edged sword. There is less of a plasticity to our brains. And if we were 25, we have less time, you know, there are more constraints and more kind of ways that we have in the grooves in our brain that are formed on how to think and how to see information presented. That's why on the startup side, I like being as close to the quote unquote metal as possible, because it keeps a little bit more plasticity in the brain. Then I get further away and I feel overwhelmed and I feel left behind. It's hard because it's kind of like driving a car really fast and you look down at the road, it's really scary. You drive a car kind of fast and you look down the road, you could start tilting the steering wheel a little bit and time slows down. When you're really close to change and technology, whatever it is, it feels really fast and it gets really confusing algorithmically and for the brain of signal noise, signal noise, signal noise. And it takes a lot of testing. It takes a lot of mistakes. You get a little bit further away, you can let people in the front lines make all the mistakes and, you know, whatever. But I like personally being closer to it. But that takes a certain temperament and it takes a certain ability to like process and stay kind of neutral to how fast things are kind of changing. That being said, what I said the past 30 to 45 days has surprised me, And I see change. I understand it. I stay adaptive. I do my mental calisthenics every morning. I'm limber. My brain is good. You know, like people before they sing, they're like, hey, 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 me. Like I do that for going to work. And the last 30 to 45 days has shocked me at the expectations in the market. And I've tried to take it in stride. You know, like I still have people coming in saying, I want the premium package. You're great. I don't care about all this vibe-coded crap. Do it right. But I've had enough where I'm not dismissing it. I'm going, shit, there's something here. I got to go understand this at a level more than I already understand it. It's not like I don't get it, but I didn't get it in the sense of professionalizing and packaging it and selling it as a real service versus just a shiny toy. It's gone from shiny toy to I want that in the window. And I'm like, that's not even for sale. That's just a mannequin display. They're like, that's what I want. I'm like, what about all these pants? I can hem and sew these. These are real pants. I go, I don't want those pants. So that's what's kind of happened at my storefront in the past like two months.
So you mentioned, I think you mentioned the OpenAI announcement. I mean, I think OpenAI is having a launch for GPT-5 today, right? You know, I think that Sam Altman, I think he compared it to the Manhattan Project, right? I think power and peril. Last week on the episode, Dave Finnegan, better known to his friends as Finn, said consumers don't want to be tracked, right? They want to be recognized. You said, you referenced it earlier, and we talked in like the pre-interview about like the human brain hasn't changed in 10,000 years, right? Like empathy still matters. So like all the things that we're talking about are like when we say agentic or we say like fast, I mean, what we're saying is that the world is effectively becoming like programmable, right? And so like, do we need to teach people how to design their own operating system? Like, and who does that? Like, who's like the shepherd? I mean, can we keep up?
I think it was Vinny I was talking to from the show on the production side before this, and he is in Ireland, and you know, he was saying he was saying two things. One, Ireland has a lot of technology businesses, companies, and IT investment stuff within and operating as a country, and at the other side of it, they have a great education system program, you know, pride of kind of the country relative to EU, relative to the rest of the world. And, you know, they do kind of thoughtful European stuff and think about designing courses and programs. And there's, I guess, a new program that they're going to roll out. And he was saying that they tested it and got feedback not only from adults and researchers, but from like toddlers, you know, and it's kind of designed to help upcoming preschool, kindergarten, throughout you know, normal schooling kids in Ireland be quote unquote more global citizens and understand agentic AI kind of tools and technologies. And he was discussing, discoursing, lamenting, is that good or is it a loss of the humanities? And my kind of take on it was, I do think you need both. One, I think teaching and training people, you know, how to use these tools and understand them. It's kind of like in school, most of us were not taught these forms of technology. We also were not taught a lot of things. You're not taught finance. You're probably not taught certain things about dynamics and relationships. So there are skills that like your family's supposed to teach you, or you're just supposed to figure out on your own, but it might be pretty beneficial if there is a little bit more that's kind of provided for these. On the other side, I am a huge proponent, classic Steve Jobs style, arts and the humanities and general studies, liberal studies. Like, I do think that people should be diverse and curious and understand the poetry and the artistry. That's really what kind of dictates a lot of history and lives on, is artists and writings and musings. You know, like, it isn't always commerce and politics, for sure. Like, you know, history is written by kind of the winners, but the people that are proliferating what is being written or absorbed or ingested, it is more poetic and creative. And so I think human-wise, whether it's parenting or a family group or at school or whatever it is, we shouldn't lose our humanity. We shouldn't lose our nature and knowing how to have a conversation, knowing what to do in a family setting, reading Charles Dickens, reading, you know, Thoreau or, you know, Emily Dickinson or whatever it is, or watching a Stanley Kubrick film or, you know, seeing Lady Bird, you know, whatever, just ingesting an understanding of how people see the world in reality. They don't have to be dichotomy. They don't have to be either or. You can be a global citizen and learn tools and technologies, but you don't have to do that. It's just probably nice to know. And then you can go and sit in a field and write and do poetry, meditate, explore your consciousness and think about a rock and think about a bunny. I don't think those have to be mutually exclusive.
Got it. Well, as I said, I mean, this could take forever, so I want to bring us home. So we've talked about some really interesting stuff, right? And you mentioned it earlier, Ready Player One, which was awesome. So like, we are inside the game now, right? Like, are we shaping the rules though? I mean, and I guess like, are we just like, are we in default mode now, right? Like, is this just it? We're just like, this is it. We're defaulting, or, you know, like, are we really thinking more sort of like outside the box? I mean, are we aiming, I guess, like the question, last question is, are we aiming high enough?
Yeah, I mean, I also kind of talked with this with Vinny a little bit, where I, you know, he similarly lamenting, like, is the game kind of, is the genie out of the bottle and there's no kind of putting it back in? My kind of thing was like, I think the genie's been out of the bottle for tens of thousands of years, if not hundreds of thousands, if not millions, if not billions. Like, I just think you get Darwinian and you get pre-Darwinian. It's kind of like, what came before the Big Bang? Like, I don't know, something. We're not sitting here in a LinkedIn conversation talking about that, but like, that's pretty deep. Are we living in, you know, one universe? Is it a multiverse? Is it, you know, is it a simulation? What is God? What is spirituality? What is consciousness? Are there ghosts? Are there aliens? Like, what is it? You know, are we different than a dog? So I just think information wants to propagate. I think information wants to spread. I think information wants to be free. I think it wants to be distributed. I think it wants to bounce and fly around. And I think humans are just a byproduct of evolution and a byproduct of information kind of spreading. So it's not to lay down and just let things kind of run their course. But I think at the same time, like, I always think that good beats evil kind of in like a J.R.R. Tolkien Lord of the Rings way. It's like 50.5 to 49.5. It's like freaking close, you know? And if you were just to binary break it down, I don't think there is good or evil, but I think there is like doing the right thing versus not doing the right thing. And you kind of have to wake up every day and try to do the right thing. And it shouldn't be easy. And that's something I think I've kind of learned maybe when I was a kid and I wanted the A to Z easy street, sitting on a bench in the Hamptons, son of a landscaper and stuff, and seeing every car that goes, every fourth car that goes by, you know, you and three friends, and each one gets a different car that drives by, and someone gets a Datsun, someone gets a Nissan, and then someone has a Mercedes drive by. That's going to be my car, you know, and you're 12, you know, and you're like, yeah, like I'm going to get that. I think now as I get older, it's like, if it isn't hard, I don't want it. If it isn't hard to do, I don't want it. If it's easy, I don't trust it. And I think that just takes biological, chemical, physiological maturation. And I think life is hard, and it should be hard. And I think it should be hard for the things that, if you're lucky, it's hard for things that matter versus just hard kind of imposed on you. Mm-hmm. So I think evolution is powerful. Information wants to spread. I don't know if humans will be humans just in the singular sense for humans in 1,000 years. About what's 1,000 years? Not that long. You know, it's like you go to Europe and you go to some pub in Ireland, been around almost 1,000 years, not that long. But what do you think humans are going to look like in 1,000 years? Cyborg simulation, San Junipero, Black Mirrors out. But I think if the DNA and the ratios of stay good, stay, try to do the right thing, you know, fascism, totalitarianism, all the scary things that can happen about power and clustering and insecurities, it's real. It's not to just let things not be. So be a good person, try to do the right thing, fight for what you think is right. But I think don't also think that it's like you are contributing to reality on your own. There's just such bigger pieces and things at play. So have fun in e-commerce and on LinkedIn and do your thing, but
aim higher. We need to aim higher.
So. Yeah, aim higher, but for just yourself, I think. Like
for sure. Well, I want to first thank you for references to my youth, Blade Runner, Datsun 280, ZX, Huawei MTV. And second, for some incredible insights and taking time out of your schedule. So my friend, this has been amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. Thanks, Rick. Thanks, Jess. Thanks for everyone listening. Rock and roll.
All right. And that's a wrap, my friend. Ciao.